Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we begin with a public service announcement. The management of Osblog, having given the matter due consideration, would like to make it very clear that David Bentley is one ugly little cunt. That concludes this public service announcement. We thank you for your time.
Hello and welcome to another Arsblog Arscast. Coming up on this week's show, we'll be talking about Andrei Arshavin somewhat, also about the North London Derby, plus all the usual bits and pieces thrown in as well. I'll give you more details in a moment. So welcome to a brand new Arscast on arsblog.oleole.com. Hope we find you well this Friday, or whenever it is you might happen to be listening to this. It is going to be a relatively busy show, slightly less frantic and frenetic than last week, because Arshmania is over. Andrei Arshavin is an Arsenal player, at last. And the frenzy into which everyone had whipped themselves. Well, I won't say everyone, but many people had whipped themselves into this frenzy of madness and needing to know stuff, and it's over. Last week, we were touched in our special areas by football agents, and we didn't want to be touched in that special area. But now those feelings of guilt and shame and embarrassment, they're gone. The agent is gone, never to be seen again. And we have a footballer, a Russian, Rara Arshavin, Russia's greatest something. Love machine is not probably good when I've been talking about special areas and stuff. But you know what I mean. So that we can approach with a much more tranquil mindset. And to join me on the show in a little few minutes to talk about that will be Gilberto Silver from gunnerblog.com. As well as that, the man in the bar will have a player history. We've got a tale of the unexpected and some other bits and pieces as well. So, without wanting to go too much into the Arshavin deal, it was a mental day, wasn't it? Transfer deadline day. It was on, it was off, it was happening, it wasn't happening, they were going to accept, they weren't going to accept. The bottom line is, Arsenal played hardball, and proper hardball, to get a deal that they wanted. Zenit were in a position where they really had to sell the player. He didn't want to be with them anymore, he wanted to leave. There was this sticky issue over who owed what regards signing on fees, etc., etc. But Arsenal played it, in a very risky way, because, you know, over something like that, it can go wrong very easily. And we've got ourselves a good deal, because let's not forget, last summer, Zenit were talking about £25 million for Andrei Arshavin, raising maybe to £30 million. And I'm pretty sure that Zenit got offers which were better last summer than the one they've just sold him for. There's talk of £12 to £15 million. I was told that it could even be around £10 million with the £2 million as the extras. So that really is proper negotiating and good stuff going on from Arsenal, from all the team involved. Obviously Arsene Wenger, the new man, Ivan Gazidis, but most importantly I think Ken Fryer. And people have talked about Arsenal's inability to get transfers done without a figure like David Dean. And his name cropped up in the final couple of days of the transfer window, and people were thinking, well, maybe we need to get Dean back or someone like Dean. But I think we've, how shall we say, underestimated the abilities of the people that are there at the moment. Let's not forget, we've done this Arshavin deal, and the Alonso deal in the summer was a bit similar. But I don't think Liverpool ever had any intention of selling to us. But when you look at deals that happened before that, like the Eduardo deal and the Sanya deal, these guys came in with a minimum of fuss, turned out to be quality players, and we got the transfers done completely and utterly under the radar, which is obviously how Arsenal like to work. We all know that. They will not comment on transfers. Arsene Wenger, throughout the month of January, sang from the same hymn sheet every single day. When asked by the press, is there any news out of Arshavin? He would say, no, I don't have any news for you. When there's news, I'll tell you. The problem was, of course, that Zenit, knowing that Arshavin had to leave, that he didn't want to be there anymore, were trying to make this transfer as public as possible to generate interest from other clubs, or possible interest from other clubs. We had the guy, Dennis Lacter, who's the agent, basically responding to anyone who sent him a text message. He didn't really care who it was. So you have bits and pieces of information flying around all over the place and ending up on different websites and different blogs and what have you. And that's not a criticism of the guys from the other blogs and what have you who went out and got that information. Fair play to them. Absolutely fair play to them. But you have to question, let's say, the professionalism of someone like Lacter, who will give out that information to ordinary bloggers. And I'm not saying I'm not an ordinary blogger, because I am. I'm just a guy with a blog. I wouldn't necessarily expect anybody to give me any information if I just rang them up and asked them about a transfer worth millions and millions of pounds. If they did, I'd be like, oh, fucking hell, I can't believe he's telling me this. So that has gone on, and it's generated this speculation and frenzy that's happened. And when you have Sky Sports News and all those guys thrown into the mix with their hype and their constant, oh, we're outside the hotel, we're outside this, we're outside that, blah, blah, blah. You know, it all builds up into maybe more than it actually is. And of course, people love to see new signings. And I understand people getting frustrated maybe at the lack of information that Arsenal give them. But the reason, from my point of view, that Arsenal don't give out any information is because transfer deals are complicated at the best of times. This one has been very complicated. So if Arsenal say something that jeopardizes the deal, or if Arsenal say something, yes, we're going to sign this guy, and then it doesn't happen, well, then they look like idiots. So they keep their mouths shut and do their business, and until the business is done and dusted, they don't say anything. And I really think that is a good way to operate. More frustrating for fans, absolutely. But I think it's the best way to operate when it comes to doing your transfer business. Unlike some managers who will go very public and talk about who they want and why they want them and how much they're willing to pay for them, etc., etc. That's just the way Arsenal do business. And nobody, I don't think, should expect Arsenal to change the way they do that business. And the behaviour of Zenit, the behaviour of Lacter, the behaviour of Sky Sports and the tabloids and all that kind of stuff didn't help. But in the end, we got our man. And I'm happy he's arrived, I have to say. I think he's a quality player. I think he'll really add something to this team. Whether or not he can do it quite on Sunday or not, we're not sure yet whether he's going to be involved. But yeah, good work, Arsenal. That's all I'll say. Might not have been the most pleasant of transfer windows. It was at times frustrating, but we got what we wanted in the end, and we got it for the right price. So credit where it's due, and that goes to everybody involved in the transfer, and well done, Arsenal. So to talk a little bit more about that Arshavin guy and where he might fit in and that whole kind of stuff, as well as looking ahead to the North London Derby this weekend, I'm joined by Gilberto Silva from Gunnerblog. Hi there.
Hi there, good morning.
I've got some news just coming in here. The Arshavin deal apparently is off.
Oh, well, I'm not surprised, to be honest with you. What's the reason?
Too much blogging.
Okay. Well, yeah. I hold my hands up.
Well, you were indeed in the last day or two of the transfer window, very active, both on your blog and on Twitter and all those kinds of things, and did a sterling job of trying to get to the bottom of what was probably the most complicated, convoluted, tedious most protracted transfer saga I can remember Arsenal ever being involved in. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
Never. I honestly, I don't even think just Arsenal. The way this transfer unfolded and the way that deadline day particularly unfolded, it was off and then it was back on and then it was off again and then the deadline came and went and it hadn't happened and, you know, it's sealed 24 hours after the deadline. A ridiculous roller coaster. And whilst it was sort of quite entertaining, I have to say I'm glad to see the back of it.
It is good, yeah, exactly, to get rid of all that and know that we have a new player on our books, a quality player too, and one who isn't 18, who comes to us with a lot of potential. He's played in the European Championships, he's played in the Champions League, of course, not to great effect, was a big, big part of Zenit winning the UEFA Cup last season. He's a good addition to the squad, leaving aside the issues that we all know about, that perhaps there are other parts of the team that need strengthening as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking last night, you know, he's 27 years old, and I was trying to think, when was the last time we had a 27-year-old in our midfield? It must have been last season. I don't think we've had anyone of that age in our midfield this season. We've been forced to play, you know, obviously Rosicky's been out, and the average age of the midfield has been about, what, 20, 21 for most of the season. And it's fantastic, really, just to have someone who's just got a bit more experience, admittedly not in this league, but he, you know, he's won prizes, he's won competitions in Europe and in Russia. And I think something else about this signing is that with so many of these sort of flair players, they come from Latinate countries, and people worry, you know, they're not going to like it on a wintry night. But I think I heard, I think it was Gabriel Marcotti saying something like, he made a joke, he said, well, let's see how he does, you know, on a warm night in spring. Do you know what I mean? Because he's already adapted to the weather conditions. It's going to be, hopefully, not the same kind of process for him to go through. And I think for that reason, it makes a lot of sense.
I was watching the interview on Arsenal.com and the guy was saying, you know, what do you think of it? He's going, well, I'm looking at the weather here. It's just like being at home.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, admittedly, it's not like this. It's not like this all the time. So, you know, sometimes it's even warm enough that we can actually play our football matches rather than postpone them, which is a benefit.
All right. Well, let's talk about where he might fit into this team, because the obvious position, I suppose, for him is wide midfield and wide right, with Nasri claiming the left-hand side as his own, really. The right-hand side of midfield is where I see him initially, anyway.
Yeah, I think for me too, especially with Walcott out and Aboué currently being the man holding that position. I mean, I think longer term, the way it might go is that Wenger talks about, as he has talked about before the signing, wanting a creative unit. And I think that, you know, if you've got Nasri on one flank and Arshavin on the other, and you can probably throw Walcott and Rosicky, should he ever come back, into that mix, maybe even Wilshere next season too. There's no reason for it to be rigid, and that there's no reason that those players can't, we've already seen Nasri doing it, switching flanks. And I imagine that, you know, just the range that it gives you, if you've got those two players on those sides, they can switch around in the same way that Ljungberg and Pires, although they were primarily stuck to their left and right flanks, they did swap around. And, you know, it does give you a lot more options. But I think it is going to be wide midfield, maybe off a striker in Europe, much like Alexander Klepp was used.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Obviously, he can't play in Europe this season because he's cup-tied in the Champions League. But we saw that the 4-5-1 sort of formation, or you might call it a 4-4-1-1 formation, used to good effect in the past. He's certainly a player that could fill that role.
I think that's his ideal position, yeah, in that kind of number 10 role. I think that he has, from what I've seen, the creative attributes to play there. Hopefully his goal scoring record is better than Klebs was when he came, and certainly better than the one that he had at Arsenal. So, yeah, I think he'd be ideal there, but obviously not until next season.
It is, I suppose, close to being our record signing, given that I think Reyes was that. I don't even know if we paid all the money we were supposed to pay for Reyes.
Yeah,
but it does represent a bit of a shift in terms of Wenger's transfer policy. He's bought, not necessarily in terms of the money, but because of the age of the player. Do you think that's an acceptance, or the beginning perhaps of an acceptance from Arsene, that maybe the balance of his squad isn't quite right in terms of age and experience?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, he seems to have been saying we lack a little bit of experience for about 2 years, really. And I always remember him saying it before the January transfer window, where he went out and bought Walcott, Diaby and Adebayo, the oldest of which I think at that time was 21 or 22. Mm. So even though he's been aware of the problem seemingly for a long time, he hasn't done anything to change it because... I don't know. I guess because of his economic values, in the sense that he didn't want to invest large amounts of money in players who he didn't feel would have residual value. Now it seems he recognises that it's come to a point where he does need to bring in players who just are that little bit older. And you know, obviously it's not just about a number. Cesc Fabregas is 20, 21, but he can't be counted as, you know, a young player. He's our club captain, you know, yeah, and one of our more experienced players. It's about the experience rather than the age. And Arshavin has been playing, you know, first team football for a very long time, international football for a very, very long time. And I do hope it does represent the change in policy that we're looking to bring in. You know, I mean, I think if we were to keep most of the squad together in the summer and add no more than two quality international experienced players, we'd be in a very good position ahead of next season.
I don't think too many people would disagree with you there, and particularly when, as we've spoken about, you know, on this Arscast and many Arscasts in the past, about our need for a central defender and a central midfielder. If you want to fill those positions properly, you want to bring in that sort of quality. And you know, we saw perhaps with Alonso last summer that that was his intention. All right, well, we'll move away from Arshavin, and we'll touch on the very small matter of the North London derby against Spurs. We've a tremendous record against Spurs, as a team at the moment, we're struggling for goals. We know that Adebayo is always a candidate for a goal against Tottenham, but he probably finds himself in the worst form of his Arsenal career, well, maybe for at least 18 months. Are you confident going into this one?
I sort of dread saying this, and I hope I don't get castigated for it, but I'm not particularly confident, despite the fact that, as you say, we haven't lost to Spurs in the league for a very, very, very long time. I do feel that, you know, if you look at our midfield on Sunday, potentially, it looks very, very light. Diaby suspended, Aboué possibly injured, though how much of a loss that is debatable. You know, Arshavin unlikely to be involved, I would say. You know, we're looking quite light in there, obviously, with all the other players that are out. And Spurs are also having, you know, a dreadful season. We complain about our season. Their season is hysterical by comparison, truly appalling. And I know many Spurs fans who genuinely feel they have a significant chance of being relegated. It's not something that I... in my wildest dreams, I hope it could come true. It's not something I necessarily agree with, but they have been absolutely appalling. However, I just have a horrible feeling about Robbie Keane. horrible, horrible feeling. And I think we'll have to defend well if we're going to win on Sunday.
We saw when Harry Redknapp took over at Spurs, and not long afterwards they played us at home, and there was that... dreadful 4-4 draw, which seemed to kickstart Spurs a little bit. In the next few games, I suppose they'll be looking, obviously, at home. They'll be looking for the game against Arsenal to do something similar.
Yeah, I think we really gave them a lifeline. I mean, one wonders if they hadn't gotten that result and gone on that initial run that Redknapp had. What kind of...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Dire straits they'd be in now. I mean, you know, they'd be right down there, as opposed to right down there. But I think they will be really up for it. They need a result. But so do we. You know, we're in a good unbeaten run, but we haven't been playing particularly well. And I do think that, you know, that we've got a signing now. We've improved the squad a little bit. It's boosted the morale of the fans. If we could top that off with arguably a more significant achievement in actually beating Tottenham, then I think morale at the club probably would be as high as it's been this season.
All right. Well, as much as it might kickstart Spurs again, a win at the Lane would certainly do wonders for us. Gilberto Silva, we better leave it there. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks.
Cheers.
Thanks to Gilberto Silva from gunnerblog.com. Or if you're into the whole Twitter thing, you can follow him. His username is gunnerblog. If you're not into Twitter, you have... Thank you to Gilberto Silva for his thoughts on Arshavin and on the Spurs game coming up. Hopefully we'll have a bit more on the Spurs game. If there's any team news between now and the time I finish recording this podcast, we haven't got any yet. Don't forget to check out his blog, which is, of course, gunnerblog.com. Now, before we go any further, we'll go to the bar, where the man in the bar has a player history.
Hello and welcome to another player history right here on the Earthcast. Well, what a week that's been. Inclement weather, you could say that. We've had snow all over Dublin, so we have. It's awful. It's all well and good when everything is serene and crisp and white, like a layer of crunchy cocaine over the land. But once it starts to melt, it gets intolerable. It's just not fun at all. And then there's the whole Andrei Arshavin thing. Oh, I was following that on Sky Sports the other day. We had a game, actually, in the bar. Me and the lads were sitting up on the stools. And we said, well, about every time one of them talks about Arshavin and says, I am led to believe, or we understand, or it is thought that, or any other variation on that thing where you make it sound like you know what's happening, but you say it in such a way that if it doesn't happen, you don't look like a cunt. Look, if you're going to say something's happening, say it. If you don't know what's happening, say that too. None of this we believe, I understand, bollocks. Shove it up your holes. Anyway, every time someone said that, you had to take a drink. Well, let me tell you, I was so drunk that I woke up the next morning with the cat in the bed beside me. And I don't even have a cat. I don't know where it came from. Anyway, this week our player history is about a player whose first name begins with S. Now, I was going to do a different fella, an Icelandic fella, a guy called Siggy Johnson, because then I could make up my favourite Arsenal song, Siggy playing guitar. But then I figured that joke wasn't really that good, so I do somebody else instead. And this guy was Swedish, and his name was Stefan Schwartz. Now, he was born into a life of incredible wealth, being the son of the Schwartzes who make all the spices in the world. And he joined Arsenal in the summer of 1994 from Benfica, and everyone said, wow, look at this guy, he's blonde, he's got a left foot, he can tackle, he can shoot, he can take a penalty, this boy's gonna be awesome. He played one season for Arsenal, then fucked off. Now, the excuse he gave at the time was that his wife was unable to settle in London. Fair enough. London isn't for everybody, I suppose. And after that, he went to Fiorentina, which isn't half bad, I suppose, in the Tuscan town of Florence. Oh, the eating's good in Tuscany, let me tell you. And after that, he went to Valencia, and that too is a very lovely place with a rather temperate climate. So you can understand, perhaps, that the better surroundings were more suited to his wifely wife. However, in 1999, he went and joined Sunderland and stayed there for 4 years. Now, far be it for me to criticise the north of England or anything, but I would respectfully suggest that London is a far better place to live than Sunderland, which is a bit of a kip, really. So if you can't settle in London, how the fuck are you going to manage to settle in Sunderland? Unless, of course, he killed his wife. Yes, yes, that must be it. Nowadays, Stefan Schwartz has retired from football and is the new lead singer with Swedish pop group Ace of Base. It's true.
Another player history from the man in the bar on next week's Arsecast. Now, normally at the start of the show, I talk about what's happened since the last Arsecast. And that, of course, was the West Ham game. Which was, I'm not sure I know how to describe it. Maybe a bit like this. Yes, that's how bad the West Ham game was. Worse than that, even. Which is saying something. And it was an opportunity lost, of course, because Aston Villa managed only a draw against Wigan. And I think Arsene afterwards was a bit unhappy with the performance, with the result. A little bit tetchy in the press conference afterwards. I watched it, and I think it might have been right at the end of the press conference, certainly the bit that was televised. And it might indeed have been Amy Lawrence that asked him, did he feel it was a missed opportunity, given the fact that Villa only drew? And his response was enormously tetchy. He was, I don't really care too much for Aston Villa, I have to tell you. Thank you very much, good night. And off he went. So he knows, of course, that it was a good chance to close the gap. Villa, 5 points on us at the moment, it could have been back to 2. But it did spell out the need for somebody like Arshavin. As much as we've spoken about how we need central defender, central midfielder, blah, 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 blah. When you get into games like this, you need somebody who can provide that spark of something special. And of course, having started Robin van Persie on the bench, and Adebayor off form, and not at his effervescent best, we shall say. Because what endeared Adebayor to a lot of fans was his work rate and his energy and his commitment and running around. And he hasn't necessarily done that as much as he used to. And you feel that even if he was struggling for form, if he was showing the same kind of endeavour, well then the critics wouldn't be as vociferous. And when basically Robin van Persie has carried us through the entire month of January to play the game without him, well, at least the first hour or 65 minutes without him, it's no surprise we didn't score, because he scored all the goals or made all the goals. And in one way, I can understand him wanting to protect Van Persie, because he's had these terrible injury problems, and now he's in a great run of form, and he doesn't want to stretch him too far. I understand that. And I understand he looked at Adebayor, and he looked at Bentner, and he thought, well, look, we're playing West Ham at home. You guys are capable of getting goals. You should be capable of getting goals against West Ham. They weren't. So it turned out to be a bad move, I suppose, to rest him. When maybe he could have done more from the start, but then had he started him and he'd picked up an injury, I don't know. So again, maybe there is the indication that we need more quality in the squad. Arshavin will add that. We'll have Eduardo back in one of the striking positions soon as well. There are international friendlies next week. So he's going away to play with Croatia. And when he returns, I expect him to be involved in first team action. He may, maybe, might make the bench for the game on Sunday. Because if he is fit to go and play for Croatia in midweek, would he not then be fit to at least sit on the bench for us and give us 20 minutes at the end? Maybe. Given the fact our team is a little bit stretched, and we'll come to that in a little bit. So that was all last week's footballing action. It's been a quiet week generally, apart from the Arshavin thing, which took up all the time. Apart from that, there hasn't been much going on. Anyway, we'll look ahead to the Spurs game in a moment after the tale of the unexpected.
Welcome to Tales of the Unexpected on the Ozblog Ozcast.
Hello, my name is George, and I've got another tale of the unexpected for you. This week I've been going around all over the place. I was in here and there and over there and back there and up there and down there and around the corner from where your man did that thing to that fella that time. I was selling loads of top class stuff this week and nobody wants it. iPhones? No. Creative Zen thingies? Nobody wants them. I've got 3 Sinclair C5s, collector's items they are, and nobody wants them neither. I had 2 car doors, and 14 rolls of Axminster, and not a one could I shift. This recession has everybody in bad shape. Even Angelina Jolie didn't want the orphans I stole for her. That'll tell you how bad it is. So, to pass the time, I decided to go on the internet, and I was looking at the old News Now thing for Arsenal, and I was looking at the top stories for the last 24 hours, and incredibly, not one of them was a sensationalist, made-up headline designed to snatch visitors for a story that was worth as much as a bucket of pig shite. That was unexpected. To me.
Another tale of the unexpected on another Icecast sometime in the very near future. Now, Sunday, North London Derby against Spurs at White Hart Lane. We go into the game struggling for goals, somewhat. And we go into the game potentially with some problems in midfield. We know Diaby is out. We know he's injured, but he's also suspended. Oubue picked up a knock in the game against West Ham and had to come off. And maybe a doubt. Now, I was somewhat dubious over the seriousness of his injury, so he might well be in the squad for Sunday. But if he isn't, it leaves the manager with some decisions to make, because then we have, for midfield, let's say Nasri, Song and Danielson in the middle, and then Ramsey or Wilshere on the right-hand side. He could possibly play Vela on the left-hand side, Nasri over on the right. Or, if Eboué isn't fit, and if Arshavin is not yet ready to take part, whether it's lack of documentation, lack of match fitness, I think even if he has all his documentation, the best that we'll see is him on the bench. And if Eboué is out, then maybe he might just stick Gallas in at left back and play a back four of Sanya, Juru, Kolo and Gallas and move Clichy up to the left midfield position. I think he probably would feel a bit more secure with that rather than playing Vela. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what happens. Obviously, given what happened at the Grove, that 4-4 game, which was just horrendous, no other word for it, when you concede late goals like that, even though you've drawn the game, it feels like a loss. And when it's Spurs that scored the goals, it feels like an even bigger loss. And when stupid things happen, like Clichy falling over and balls hitting the post and David Bentley scoring from 40 yards, then it all just adds up into one big fucking huge pile of enormous cock rot. And while Spurs might be well up for this game on Sunday, at home in front of their own fans, in the midst of a relegation battle, I suppose, while all those things are going to be firing them up, our players should be sat down at some point this week and made watch a video of that 4-4 game. Because we should be doubly fired up. However fired up Spurs are, we should be more so, because we want revenge for that 4-4 game. I want revenge. I want more than revenge. But I'll settle for just revenge. We need Van Persie, obviously, to have a game. Adebayor, who has this incredible scoring record against Spurs. He took over from Pires as a guy who scored practically every time we play them. We need him to do the business. We need a big, big performance. Because irrespective of their league position or the struggles that they've been having, when it comes to the North London Derby, it's a cliche, but form goes out the window, and that's true. So we want revenge. The players should want revenge. The fans definitely want revenge. Because that hurt at home. That really hurt. And the only thing that'll put it right is a win on Sunday at White Hart Lane. I've been scouring the Arsenal.com for some team news. There isn't any yet, so we don't know really what's going to happen. I know Arsene usually has a video out on Friday morning, so I'll try and update that on the site, and we'll get a better idea of the team news over the next couple of days, and we'll cover that on the blog. So that's about it. Until next week's Arsecast, take it really easy. Here's to a good performance on Sunday and 3 points. Or 3 points and a shit performance. Or the worst performance we ever had, but still a jammy 3 points with a lucky goal off someone's arse. I don't care. The penis of Emmanuel Eboué could score the goal. It makes no difference to me. Here's hoping. I'll talk to you all next week on the blog, of course, and on next week's Arsecast. Take it easy. Bye, bye, bye.
Hello, this is Robbie Keane here, and there you are. I don't suppose you really want to be hearing from me, but here I am. There's not much you can do about it. I'm in your ears. I'm just back from a fairly brutal time at Liverpool, so I am. Didn't work out for me up there, and it had started so brilliantly. I remember the childhood club of me dreams. And the first day, the manager brought me into his office and he sat me down and he said, "Hijo de puta." And as you all know, that's a very traditional Spanish welcome. Well, unfortunately, it all went downhill from there. But now I'm back at Spurs, you know, captain and everything, which is great. You can fuck off to another club, treat them like shite, and still come back and be captain, well, dearly. Anyway, given the weather we've had this week, I'd like to leave you with a little song, which encapsulates everything that I'm feeling at this moment. I'm walking through the air, I'm flying over White Hart Lane. Benny has kicked me out, I'm right back here again. I'm walking through the air, we've only got a couple of months to stop the team from going down, cause we are cunts.
Tired
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.